My call to people is to enter into the real consideration of self and of life and of the divine. Enter into the gnosis of all the factors of our existence. Enter into the gnosis or true realization of the divine and develop the characteristics of a life that is being spiritually transformed, not by the one cause that's in charge of everything, because there isn't any such force. That is why this world, you see, is such a difficult place. It is not directly caused by or under the charge of God. It is the product of all kinds of causes. And what we see here are the kinds of visibility that arise in the divine way, way, way down in the scale of possibility, in the grossest dimension of possibilities. What we see in this world are the grossest kinds of effects of complication, of an unenlightened impulse. This world inheres in God, most certainly. There is only God. But that realization is the expression of the gnosis that comes through self-transcendence. And only in the midst of such self-transcending gnosis are you transformed. Only in that case is your vision or your view transformed. And only in that case are you, as the causer of effects, transformed. So this question with which we began, are we related to a great other power, a kind of parent deity, who's in charge of everything and who is protecting us? Based on our gnosis, our true realization, we must say no. But the question itself is the product of the ego, is the product of non-gnosis, you see, false views, self-possession. It is the expression of a mind that has been created by egoic experience and propagandized by the various instruments of egoic society. Such a question doesn't arise in the midst of the real spiritual process. It arises to us only in our weakness, our self-possession, and our casual mind. The machine of everything is always tending to reorganize itself in the direction of equanimity. Every little violation, therefore, is snuffed. Is itself invites a reaction by the system. So the system, like your own body-mind, is always generally wanting to achieve a state of equanimity. There's that kind of singularity somehow in the essence of everything, regardless of the multiplicity that is created and made apparent. But in order to achieve that equanimity, the body would destroy itself, for instance. See, the body gets diseased as a result of its encounters and its excesses and all the rest of it. And at some point, the body will self-destruct in order to achieve a harmonious state of energy. But the whole world could be destroyed. Someday it will. Someday the sun is going to change. You see, the sun is a star. Stars go through evolutionary stages that take millions or even billions of years. They get bigger and smaller, and in the process of doing all this, the associated bodies, like planets and so forth, are also changed and in time destroyed. So this is a mechanism of destruction associated with the very process of harmony everywhere. There's an overriding principle that you can't call a cause. It's not operative as a cause particularly. It is operative as essence, as a prior kind of condition. And everything is linked up with that. And insofar as you deviate somehow or other from the allowable limits of the mechanical system within which you exist, you kick up against the opposites, the forces, also mechanically present, that will not allow that kind of deviation. So the body and societies and planets, worlds, of all kinds are tending to be aberrated, but as they become aberrated, they're also suffering the resistance of the system to such aberration. So the system, which is also relatively mechanical and self-contained, reacts to those aberrations and tends to destroy or limit in one way or another these deviant changes. And the results of that resistance can be called, you could say it's the law or the righteousness of God somehow, purifying everything. But a lot of those movements, you see, are, in fact, all of those movements are the reflexes of the system as it is. In another frame, in another dimension, there are different kinds of reflexes, different kinds of structures, all of which inhere in God, but none of which are God acting directly, except in the case of an entity or a being or a consciousness that has thoroughly transcended itself and is in a state of absolute conscious, self-radiant unity with the transcendental being. So here and there, there are beings or great entities that fulfill the law of God, who are present as the effect of God in some very fundamental sense. But you see, such beings do not act like nature. You could say that as a result of everything people are doing and so forth, there may be wars, famines, diseases, destruction on a grand scale, including natural changes like pollution of water, pollution of air, earthquakes, volcanoes, who knows what other kind of terrible thing. Well, in some sense you could say that that's the visitation of the divine on mankind, it's the law of God made operative. But God doesn't operate that way when present through direct agency. See, the adept doesn't do that. The divine given pure agency is not destructive, but liberating, transforming, manifesting happiness, bliss, even if the moment in which that bliss is manifested appears to be a moment of destruction because of the circumstance that simply is, or the circumstance that you have created, or whatever. The divine agency itself is always transformative in the blissful sense, the spiritual sense, in the form of love, and not in the form of terrorizing poor beings, you see. And so the agency through which to see God operative is not nature. The agency through which to see God operative is in the knowers of God and the adepts in the framework of your own condition of existence. And such adepts being free of self, being free of the limiting imposition of their own mechanism, show the condition in which everything inheres and are creatively, spontaneously active as that condition or that self-radiant influence. So it is the adept rather than nature and the God presumed but to be behind nature in its mechanical mode that is the sign of God, and it is your own gnosis or realization of God that demonstrates the power of the divine rather than merely those events that are simply here to be observed on the immense scale of nature. In other words, when we enter into the gnosis, the true realization of God, we transcend the visions of egoity and the mere appearance of everything. When an adept appears, the adept certainly must criticize, but there's never any negative intention. You can't even say there's any intention at all. There's simply the self-radiant personality of the adept, and you as you are, as you are tending to be, you and the mechanics of your self-presentation, experience that radiance or that force in some sort of way that may offend your tendencies. would seem to be calling you to transcend your tendencies, to break out of your pattern, you see. But the adept truly only magnifies love, bliss, happiness, the feeling of being. That's really all that is granted or given by the adept, and nothing more. But the adept is playful, a present, through all the mechanisms of a human being, and therefore enters into a conjunction with beings as they are tending to be, as they present themselves. And that creates the play. You, as you are, determine, therefore, what the play will be. But what are you playing with? Nothing but that self-radiant force that is free, that is love, that is bliss. So this is the uniqueness of the spiritual master in the midst of your trial of realization. But ultimately, you will discover that the spiritual master never was anything but the Great One, seeming to be a particular someone, and seeming to be other than yourself, and yet somehow intimately unified with yourself, even in that case. Eventually, everything becomes recognizable. You are recognizable. The spiritual master is recognizable. Only that Great One is obvious. And then you will understand the unique work of the adept, you see. The spiritual master is a kind of laser force, a kind of fine, one-pointed force of transmission, imposition, that transforms everything and makes this process of transformation possible. But ultimately, you will clearly discover, not merely enjoy at the level of some sort of latent intuition, but you will clearly discover, most directly discover, that the spiritual master is nothing but the living one, incarnated, made apparent. And likewise, everything is only that. You will see that everything, all of your experiences, strangely enough, as will turn out, even though everything is caused by all kinds of limited impositions, causes, and so forth, you will discover in the paradox of ultimate realization that even all of that arbitrariness of experiencing was somehow or other all the communication of the Great One. It will seem to you to be a kind of deliberate drama, a kind of remarkable theater of direct help in every fraction of it, you see. That is so, but it is also so that everything that appears here is the result of arbitrary or individuated causes, and therefore, apart from realization, is not truly to be interpreted, not rightly interpreted, as the act of God. Both these things are true, you see. It depends on the condition in which you observe or become aware of phenomena. And in the self-possessed, egoic, or unenlightened state, it is not true that nirvana and samsara are the same. It is not true that God is the cause of everything or in charge of everything. On the other hand, in the case of a perfect enlightenment, perfect recognition, it is absolutely true that God is causing everything and is everything and is in charge of everything. And nirvana and samsara are absolutely identical. So you make sense out of it.